everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith podcast for June 2015. I'm your host, Jonathan Butrin, and today I am going to review Jurassic World. Or rather, I'm going to tell you all the reasons I hated Jurassic World. It's true. I did not like this film at all, and I wanted to. I had really high hopes for it. I wanted it to be great, and it wasn't. So, in the words of Samuel L. Jackson from the original Jurassic Park, hold on to your butts and prepare yourself for a rant. But first, a spoiler alert. Usually, I'm able to avoid spoilers. I've written every review so far, spoiler-free, speaking in general terms, but as I was putting together the outline for this one, I couldn't resist. I need to get into the nitty-gritty of why I dislike this film so much, and I have to use specifics. So if you have not seen Jurassic World, please stop this right now and come back when you've seen it. To be fair to the artistry and the filmmakers, please do not let me spoil the film for you. If you have seen it, we can proceed. And one other disclaimer, I realize the tone this podcast is probably going to get a little strong. So let me just say up front, I realize this is just a movie. I realize there are many other things in the world more worthy of outrage than this film. And I also realize that the filmmakers and everyone responsible for this movie are not imbeciles. They set out to make a good movie. They came up short. It happens. It happens to the best of them. Every single great director has a dud on their resume, and so let me just throw that out there right up front. Here's why I'm passionate about this franchise, all right? I love Jurassic Park, the original Jurassic Park, 1993. I'm 8 years old, I'm in a theater, and I'm scared out of my mind. You know, I've shared it before on Cinema Faith that I stood up, I said, we gotta go. It's the scariest thing I'd ever seen at that point in my life. And my mom said, sit down, it's just a movie. And I proceeded on. And wouldn't you know it, when that thing came out on VHS, yes, VHS, I watched it probably 50 times, maybe. I mean, upwards of that throughout the course of my childhood. I mean, when friends came over, that's just what we did. We watched Jurassic Park because it was the coolest thing we'd ever seen. And so more than any other movie, even more than Star Wars, I really think Jurassic Park was the movie of my childhood. So that's why I'm passionate about this, okay? And I rewatched it again a couple weeks ago, and it hasn't aged a bit. It is still the great movie. It always was. Here's the thing about Jurassic Park that's awesome, okay? There's no filler in that movie. I mean zero. Every line, every shot works. It's precise. It's to the point. It's just honed in for maximum effect. That movie is perfect. I'll declare it right there. From beginning to end, a perfect film. Spielberg was just in the zone. The way he masterfully handles tension just builds slowly. It's genuinely scary. You've got just wonderful characters. Dr. Malcolm, Dr. Grant, Dr. Sadler, John Hammond. So many great moments. The music. Ugh, just everything works about that movie. And as can be expected with any successful film, there were sequels. They weren't wonderful sequels. I think The Lost World is a fairly good movie. I would call it a good movie, not a great movie. But it fell short of the bar that Jurassic Park set, but not by a whole lot. Jurassic Park 3 was a little bit of a downscale from that. So you definitely have kind of a slipping slope there. But I had high hopes for this one. I mean, it's been, what, 14 years since Jurassic Park 3, right? So we've had a lot of time pass. And I think this is the time, when you have that long of a stretch, it's time to recreate the magic, okay? You don't have to continue on from anything that you've done before. Just go back to the source and recreate what was great about the original picture. And that's the thing that really gets me, because when I was reading interviews with the director, Colin Trevorrow, he was just, he couldn't stop talking about how much he loved the original Jurassic Park and how he wanted to recreate the magic of the original, to go back to that first film, find out what worked, capture the essence of the original Jurassic Park. And so I'm going to compare Jurassic World a lot to Jurassic Park. And you might think that's unfair, but I don't think it is, because the director himself made the comparison so much in interviews, and not just interviews, but throughout the entire movie of Jurassic World. I mean, you probably noticed, what, maybe 5-6 references to the original Jurassic Park, down to that IT guy having a Jurassic Park t-shirt. I mean, let's be clear, Colin Trevorrow invited comparisons to the original. He put himself in that discussion. So I don't think it's out of bounds to compare it to the original. And unfortunately, when you do, you come to the distinct revelation that Jurassic World is not anywhere in the same league as Jurassic Park. It's not even close. In fact, I would say it's the exact opposite of everything that that film stands for. So, the Jurassic World starts off with this scene of these eggs hatching, right? Because the whole premise is that you've got this new dinosaur called Indominus Rex, and so the movie opens up with this the egg of Indominus Rex hatching, and right away, from the start, I'm transported back to the original. All right, because I remember that famous egg hatching scene in the original. You remember that when the Velociraptor comes out of that egg and John Hammond's there and everybody's gathered around. I think actually it was the cut scene on the back of my VHS, right? They're all gathered around the little egg and John Hammond's like, "Come on, little one, come on," in his accent, and he holds this the raptor in his hands. And it looks so real because it is real. Like everything in Jurassic Park, they use these robotic animatronic dinosaurs. And so when John Hammond's holding this thing in his hands, I mean, just the way that he interacts with it is so genuine and authentic. But in Jurassic World, it's there's some animatronics, but predominantly it's CGI. And so right off the bat, you have this CGI creation of this egg and this dinosaur hatching out of the egg, and it just feels different. It doesn't look bad. I mean, I talk about it all the time. We're in the golden age of CGI, right? CGI doesn't look bad anymore. We're past that. But it does feel different when you have such a direct comparison like this to the original. It feels different. So right off the bat, you know, I'm just thinking back to that original hatching scene and how this feels different with this new sort of the egg popping off and the pupil rolling around and dilating. And just it's so obvious that it's a creation rather than something that feels authentic. But hey, okay, first scene of the movie, you know, I'm not one to hold a grudge at the first scene of any movie, so we're rolling along. And we get to the kid at his home, this cute kid, and we're starting to establish our main character. It's cool. He's got a little bit of a wound in him. There's some sort of family dynamic going on. Great. All right. We're starting to settle in. Let's do this thing. Then we get to the park and you start off with your first big red flag. Okay. The iconic music from the original kicks in. I mean, the classic John Williams score, right? That everyone knows anywhere. Just that old bottom bum 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 bottom bum 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 bottom bottom bum bum bum, you know, it just rises. It's climactic. It has majesty to it. And of course, the first time you hear that music in the original Jurassic Park was in the awesome Brontosaurus scene, where you have this guy, Dr. Grant, who's this fossil expert. He's been digging up dinosaurs his whole life, and for the first time, he sees a real dinosaur. I mean, it's there, and just the buildup of that is amazing. His head churns, he takes it all in, and there you have this amazing music accompanied by this amazing scene of these dinosaurs walking across the plain, and you see the wonder in Dr. Grant's eyes. And it's incredible. It's a great scene, right? So that exact same music comes into play in this movie, right? down to the T. And what do you get? You have the kids are coming into the hotel room. The music starts building, right? All of a sudden, the kid, Gray, he rushes to the window right when the music reaches its climax. And he opens the window. And you're expecting to see something majestic. And what do you see? People walking around in buildings. And this pyramid thing that we zoom into. It's a theme park. There's not even any dinosaurs. It's just buildings and people. Right at the climax of this amazing, famous music that we all know from this wonderful scene. And that's right there. Boom. I just knew something is off here. Something is not right. This is not clicking. This is the same feeling I got with The Phantom Menace, you know, that first big new Star Wars movie, Episode One. We're excited, we're pumped up. This is like the resurrection of our childhood. And 20 minutes in, approximately, you realize something is off here. The elements are there, right? There's the surface elements, there's the music, there's the logo, they're talking about things I know, and yet you realize this is an inferior product. It has the elements, but there's no heart, there's no soul, there's nothing that made the original great. And that's what I started feeling right at that scene, just like 15, 20 minutes into the movie. Okay, so then we move into the park a little bit. And then it starts getting worse, because what we find out is that everyone is sort of over dinosaurs. Okay. For some reason, the park's been open for like 3 years or something like that. It's been open a while, and people are sick of seeing dinosaurs. So much so that we have to create a new scary dinosaur to keep the public entertained, because they've been there, done that. Okay? What? I'm sorry, but that is the wrong setup for a movie that wishes to capture the spirit of the original. If that truly was Colin Trevorrow's goal, to capture what made the original work, your premise will not achieve that, okay? Because you had an opportunity on your hands. You basically could have done with Jurassic World exactly what you did with Jurassic Park, all right? On a bigger scale for a brand new generation, because the sequels, Jurassic Park 2 and 3, didn't have a park. I mean, you had this horrible stuff going down on these islands, right? The public isn't involved in this. They probably see it from, like, news clippings or whatever, but they're not, like, it's not like a park gone bad, right? So you have an opportunity to go back to the original premise, right? And even better, though, because in the original, you had these characters who were trying out a park that was going to open in the future. Well, guess what? Now you've got a park that is open. John Hammond's vision has come to life, and it's even better than it was, than he could have ever imagined, okay? So let's just picture this scenario. It's opening day of the brand new, finally, it's here, Jurassic World theme park, all right? You've got these two kids, and they know the head honcho lady, so they get opening day tickets, they fly on up, and you get to see the wonder in their eyes. You get to be transported right through them at the wonder again of seeing dinosaurs walking around, seeing these amazing sights, being a tourist in this park. You get to be just like it was back in the original, but even better. That's a great premise. That would have captured exactly what the original captured, and it would have been perfect, right? But instead, what you get is it's not opening day. It's 3 years in, or something like that. I honestly don't remember the timeline. I just know the park's been open a while. Everyone's been there, done that, right? They're working on the new dinosaur because the public's getting bored. And you have this older brother, Zach, who's more interested in his cell phone than the dinosaurs that are all around him, right? He can't stop looking at the girls. He can't stop looking at his iPhone. He's in a theme park with dinosaurs, and he's looking at his phone. That's what we've come to, right? Come on, okay? And then you have the younger brother who is excited, granted, but it's like he already knows everything that's going to be at the park. He rushes in the door, goes right to this, goes right to that. He knows everything. so we see no wonder really with him. I mean, he's excited to be there, but it's not like this is fresh or new for him. So we needed that, man. We needed that wonder of the original. Like, every time you go back and watch the Brontosaurus scene, even if you've seen it 50 times, you feel goosebumps because you're seeing dinosaurs for the first time through Dr. Grant. You see his eyes just glaze over, and he can't believe what he's seeing, and we can't believe what he's seeing, even though we've already seen it a billion times. That's what we needed again from these kids, that sense of wonder. And it's not there because the premise is wrong. It's just the wrong setup for this movie after however many years it's been. And it's just a really big missed opportunity, honestly, from a director who wanted to capture that feeling. It's hard to understand that. So we really needed to feel like a tourist at this park. And I didn't feel like that, right? These kids go to a few exhibits, but you never really get the sense that you're there, that you're really like one of the guests of the park, because you don't really get a sense for what it's like to walk into the opening. You know, it's like, you remember in the original, you walked into the visitor center and there was that big skeleton of the T-Rex and that sign, like, when the dinosaurs ruled the earth. And then you start going to the big huge doors, and you go one after another to these exhibits in the original, and you feel like you're there. You feel like you're a part of this experience. And that's what we needed to feel with these kids. But they just kind of bounce around, and what you see just isn't, frankly, it isn't that cool. Like, it all looks really weird and artificial and like busy. And maybe that's what they were going for. Like, this is 2015 and there would be computers and stuff everywhere, and it wouldn't be like the stripped down Jurassic Park version. I guess, but why can't we just have a really cool park that you would actually want to go to, right? That you would dream that this park really exists so I could go to it, instead of this sort of stuff flying around everywhere and you can't even make sense of anything that's going on. This is not a park I would want to go to, and it clearly is already boring everyone else because they need a new dinosaur. So you don't feel like a genuine tourist there, and it's a bummer. So, all right. So then you get to Chris Pratt. Now, look, there's no question. Chris Pratt's a cool dude, all right? He sold me in Guardians of the Galaxy, and I was excited to see him in this, and he doesn't really disappoint, right? He's Chris Pratt. He's cool. He's got a presence about him. When the kids fall in love with him later on and they're just taken with him, you get it because you feel the same way, right? He's cool. But he's not a character. We don't know anything about this guy. Nothing. I mean, they tell you like one thing. He worked for the Navy once. Great. That's it. That's all you get, right? This isn't a character. This is a prototype. This is the essence of two-dimensional. This is like they took Han Solo, Dr. Grant, Indiana Jones, and they just kind of put it in a blender, and there you go. Happy, but we're not, because we want a real character. We don't want something superficial. I mean, he looks cool, but there's no depth, right? And the original Jurassic Park had great characters. There's Dr. Grant with Dr. Sadler, and right from the bat, they're arguing about whether or not to have kids, and they have these really funny conversations about how kids smell, and it's just like, it's awesome, right? And Dr. Grant, you have him living in this old school world of digging up dinosaur bones, but there's technology on the horizon and computers, and he doesn't like it, and he's living in the past, and that's great. Jeff Goldblum's Malcolm, he's all about chaos theory, and he's explaining what he's passionate about, and he has that line's like, always looking for the next X-mas Malcolm, right? We understand that character. We get him. It works. And then John Hammond, like that amazing scene where he talks about the flea circus and how he wanted to create something with this park that was real, that you could reach out and touch. And we just see it in his eyes, what this guy's all about, right? Those are great characters, deep characters. We don't get that at all with Chris Pratt's Owen. That's his name, Owen. We just don't get it right from the start. We're just supposed to accept this is a cool guy. He's smarter than everyone else. Boom. That's enough. But we need to know what makes him tick. We need to know who he is, what he wants, where he's going, what he's all about, and we need three dimensions to care about him. That's because ultimately that's what we have to do is care about this guy to the point where we don't want something bad to happen to him, right? And the only character that I think we really care about in this movie is the younger brother, Gray. I mean, because actually we feel something from him, right? His parents are going through a divorce. He cries, like, we understand there's pain there, and we want him to be okay. And so we don't want anything to happen to Gray, but nothing's going to happen to Gray. This is a PG-13 movie. Kids don't die in PG-13 movies. So, I mean, everyone knows nothing's going to happen to Gray, okay? And he's the only character that really, honestly, we don't want anything to happen to. That's a problem. I mean, in the original Jurassic Park, we cared about every single one of those characters. I mean, there were like five characters that you loved that you did not want to see hurt, and they were all in danger, right? It wasn't just the kids that you liked. I mean, you liked Dr. Grant and Malcolm and Hammond. You didn't want anything to happen to them, and you knew that very well could have. Something could have happened to them, and that they were expendable. And so there's genuine tension there, right? There's depth. There's suspense, and that's what we needed. And it comes from characters. It comes from caring about characters, and we don't have that here. Another character, speaking of, is Bryce Dallas Howard, who plays Claire. She's like the big CEO of the park. And, you know, she's like this big businesswoman, uppity person who has that sort of like first class vibe. And then, of course, like middle of the way, suddenly she transforms into this stripped down, like, kicking butt with the boys type character, which was completely unbelievable. I just don't understand how we got from A to B there. It just happens to happen. It just happens because they want it to happen. And so I just didn't think overall that she was a very likable character. I don't have no problem with Bryce Dallas Howard. I like her in other things, but I wasn't just really jiving with her in this part. I mean, it was okay. I do think there was some acting issues here and there, some line deliveries that were a little off. I just wasn't blown away by her. She wasn't terrible, but didn't really like the character, and I didn't think maybe it was the right fit for her. But so that's Claire, and so she runs this park, and of course everything goes wrong, right? Because this is a Jurassic Park movie. And that's okay. That's what we expect to happen. Everything needs to go wrong. But and that was exciting. It could have worked, you know, on this amazing new premise of everything going wrong with all of these people. And if you had followed the spirit of the original, but it doesn't quite work out that way. But that's Jurassic Park, right? Things are going to go wrong. Jeff Goldblum said in The Lost World, he's like, oh yeah, that's how it starts. And then later there's running and screaming, right? Great line. So that's fine. Things are going to fall apart. There's going to be hopefully tension, but the problem is there's not. And every time I watch Jurassic Park, up to when I watched it a few weeks ago, I still feel tension to this day. Like, just, but you don't have it here. There wasn't one moment in Jurassic World where my heart raced and I actually felt like I was in danger, like I did from Jurassic Park. Not one. I mean, we have this new dinosaur who's supposed to be really scary, right? But he's really not. I mean, he's kind of cool, I guess. But is he scary like the T-Rex was scary from the original? Not a chance, right? Think back to the original, the first time T-Rex comes out of his cage in Jurassic Park. Think about that. Think about the amazing buildup of that scene, right? Where it starts off with just the water rippling, right? And you see the ripples in the water and you know something's wrong here, right? And then the characters are starting to rationalize and the lawyer dude's like, maybe it's the power trying to come back on, right? But you know, no, that's T-Rex. And then you've got the lamb slamming down on the Jeep, and all of a sudden, the hand messing with the wires, and then bzz, 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 the wires come undone, and there he is. T-Rex is out of his cage, And he is, and these people are exposed. Then he goes over and starts messing with the kid's car, and you have Grant stepping in with Malcolm and their flare, and just what a great scene. If only there was a scene like that in Jurassic World, right? But there's not. And I think part of the problem goes back to CGI, because the original T-Rex, he was this completely animatronic robot dinosaur. And so the way that he interacts with the characters in that scene, with the rain dripping down off of him, and how his head just like slides over and like right in front of Dr. Grant's and like blows his hat off, and just it's amazing, and it feels so real to this day. It does, from 1993, and yet we have this 2015 Indominus Rex that doesn't ever feel real to me. Always looks like a computer program playing around with real people. That's what it looked like in every scene of the movie. It, except maybe like when the Chris Pratt is in front of the Jeep and the teeth, you know, make an appearance behind him. That looked real, and it probably was real. But when you see the full-bodied Indominus Rex, didn't come close to T-Rex and the tension we feel from that. And it's probably CGI, and that's unfortunate. Why couldn't we have done an animatronic dinosaur? If it was good enough for 1993, certainly we could do that and better in 2015, you know? It probably would work a heck of a lot better now than it did back for Spielberg. But it's like, why mess with something that worked so well? I don't know. So then you have your villain. Every movie's got to have a villain, and Vincent D'Onofrio plays the villain, and this character, I'm sorry, he's just ridiculous. There's no other way to say it. I loved Vincent D'Onofrio recently in Daredevil on Netflix, right? I've talked about that before. I mean, he was so great in that role, so I was really excited when I saw him. I was like, I didn't even know he was in it. I was like, sweet, here we go. And he's like playing more of like, you know, a totally different character. It was cool. But it wasn't cool because this is a horrible character. So here's a guy who believes that raptors should be used to fight wars, right? Just think about that sentence. Raptors should be used to fight wars. And it's just, it's lunacy, right? No one would be so foolishly gung-ho about this idea, right? And he should know it from what's happened in the islands of Jurassic Park. And he, even just staying within the movie, he should know it because he himself witnesses this, like, boy fall off the rafters and get caught up in the raptor pit, and Chris Pratt has to save him, and the raptors end up churning on both of them. Even though Chris Pratt is supposed to be this like amazing trainer, the raptors still churn on him, and yet somehow Vincent D'Onofrio still believes with all of his heart that we need to use the raptors to fight wars, and they're going to obey us, and it's going to be great. And it's just, it's ridiculous. I mean, you always have to strain credibility a little bit with Hollywood movies, okay? I get that, right? There's always that sense where, like, this probably wouldn't happen in real life, but then there's a point where you've stretched past all reasonable plausibility, and you're just in just ridiculous territory, and I think this character is the latter, and the way that he has this conspiracy with B.D. Wong from the original, this you know, who's now like a mad scientist, is coming up with these crazy dinosaurs because, you know, emails tell him to do it. Like, seriously, what is that? The owner of the park confronts B.D. Wong, and he's like, well, you said in your email that we needed to make it scarier. It's like, what? Really? Emails are telling you what to do, and you're just like blindly following it. Just, what the heck? So of course we have this villain, and he kicks the bucket at the end, which kind of weird. I like, he gets his arm bitten by the raptor, and then he dies. And there was something that was just weird about the deaths in this movie. I don't know what it was, like why it struck me that way, because I mean, it's not on the grand scheme of things, it's not terribly, like, violent, as in, like, gruesome, horrible, bloody, but, like, the deaths were kind of just struck me as callous. I don't know why. Like, it felt off for some reason. Like, that, we have that assistant lady, right, who is the assistant to Claire, and she's supposed to be taking care of the kids, and then, like, we don't really have any connection to her. We don't know, we don't feel like she's horrible, or we don't feel she's great. It's just, like, she's, we're just kind of indifferent to her, but then all of a sudden, like, these, those flying dinosaurs come and, like, take her a few steps and drag her around, and then they throw her into the big tank with the fish, big, huge whale dinosaur that, like, eats her alive, and you're just like, wow, really? Like, what did they have against her? That was horrible. And then you have that, the owner of the park, who was, like, John Hammond's friend from back in the day, apparently, and he was all right. I mean, he wasn't a great character. He wasn't three-dimensional like pretty much everybody in the movie, but he was kind of goofy, right? He drove the helicopter, and he had a few good lines, and then all of a sudden, he just, like, goes on a tailspin with his helicopter, and the whole thing just blows up, and it's like, oh, he gone. Sorry. Bye. Didn't really have a chance to say goodbye, and then it's just, they don't talk about him ever again. Just, like, weird, honestly. It just felt really just random, and, like the whole film, actually. Just really thrown together, weird. Like, that control room guy who suddenly hits on his coworker just out of nowhere in, like, the third act of the movie, just randomly. Where is that coming from? It just, it makes no sense, and that's how I felt about the whole movie. It just felt so scattershot, so all over the place. There's no consistent tone, no tension, just goofy and weird. But I'll tell you the most problematic scene for me. This comes towards the end. This was the clincher. So you have the big fight at the end, right, where the Indominus Rex is out and he's fighting Chris Pratt, and he is and the kids are in danger and everybody's in danger. Okay, so Claire has to save the day, and so she gets a bright idea that she is going to release the T-Rex from his cage, and T-Rex is going to come and going to solve all the problems. Okay, so she goes to the T-Rex cage, opens the door to T-Rex's cage, lights a torch, and T-Rex just comes out, and it's like, whoa, just like staring at it. They're like nose to nose, right? And then Claire starts running in high heels. High heels, people. And somehow makes it back to the compound in time to dodge out of the way, throw the torch, and T-Rex just blindly follows the torch and saves the day. High heels. You have to stay within the rules that your movies have established, right? Like, think back to the first time we have a character running from T-Rex. Who was it? Ian Malcolm in the first one, right? This is a pretty buff dude. We know that because there's a whole scene with him with his shirt off, just laying there like Mr. Clad of the day. And so he's a buff guy. He's got regular shoes on, not high heels. He starts running from T-Rex. What happens? Within like 3 seconds, T-Rex is on top of him, throws him in the air into the bathroom thing, and he's out for the count for like 6 scenes. He's just unconscious. That's what T-Rex does. T-Rex is fast. You cannot outrun T-Rex in high heels. That's ridiculous. And that was it. That was like the cherry on top for me of a horrible experience that Jurassic World was. I was just done with that. Just forget it. Just a total botch job. Sorry. That scene was the clincher. So, whew. So there you have it. I'm sorry. I know I've been negative. This is kind of not typical for me. I saw this with my wife, and we generally walk out of movies and we're like, oh, that was pretty good. And this time my wife actually thought it was pretty good. And I just said going on and on about how much I hated it. And she was like, what is wrong with you? Like, you're being way too harsh. And maybe I am. Again, maybe I am, right? But I've told you why, and this was just like my childhood, just coming to life before my eyes and just going down the toilet, just being killed. Hollywood killing my childhood, just like they did with The Phantom Menace and Star Wars and with Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal, whatever, and now this, right? It's just, But hey, maybe there's still hope on the horizon, right? We've got that little movie coming out in December, Star Wars, and maybe that will begin the redemption of my childhood and we'll begin to rebuild what's been lost. I exaggerate because I care. All right. You know what? We need some redemption, right? I've ranted much too long. Let's talk about some truth that's in Jurassic World, because there is truth in Jurassic World, despite itself, despite what it did. It does manage to address, to its credit, some really important themes. So this whole park basically comes apart because the scientists decided to mess around with nature, right, and bioengineer this new dinosaur, and they took all these different elements from these different animals, and they threw them together, and then they had this killing machine that, of course, churned on everybody and became this sort of death rattle for everybody in the park. Unfortunately, that's not science fiction anymore. That is actually happening today. And I would liken that to GMOs. Now, GMO stands for genetically modified organisms, right? So we're in the same ballpark here. And I know there's been a lot of debate about this, a lot of fights, but I stand on the side that GMOs are probably a horrible, horrible idea. I actually heard a sermon about this from my pastor, Jason Butler, who hopefully will be writing for Cinema Faith before long. And he's very passionate about this subject, and he talked at great length about this corporation called Monsanto. Now, Monsanto, what they've done is they've basically taken seeds that farmers use to produce all the foods we eat, and they've genetically modified them so that they're better, quote-unquote, right? They grow faster, produce more crops, whatever. That's the company line. They're resistant to, like, certain bugs and certain things that are harmful to the seeds, but most importantly, they're resistant to the pesticides that Monsanto produces. So basically now, because of Monsanto's genetically modified seeds, you can spray pesticide directly onto the seeds, and voila, you have no more problems, and the seeds are perfectly safe. So we are eating food that has been drenched in pesticides from the ground up, and that's just a fact, that we are ingesting that. And they will claim that there is nothing harmful about their pesticides, that it's not hurting us at all. But I think time will tell. I think that there are bound to be side effects from these things, and there have been studies that have come out that have linked these things to birth defects and cancer, and it's not good. I think our genetic engineering, much like the genetic engineering in Jurassic World, may be very harmful to us right now and into the future. And that's a problem. It's a moral problem. And even beyond just the health concerns, it's a real problem with the farmers. I mean, Monsanto makes these super seeds, I guess if you want to call them that, but then they charge a lot more than regular seeds because they're so much greater. And then they make this stipulation that the farmers can't use the seeds again, that you... This is for real. Look it up. You cannot use the seeds into the next harvest. And farming practice for the last however many thousands of years has been that you save your seeds. You don't waste any seed that you bought. You use it for the next harvest as long as you can, right? That saves you money. And that is extremely helpful. Monsanto will sue you if you use any of their seeds into the next harvest and you save them. You must destroy all of their seeds and use them one season at a time. Now, why would they make that stipulation? Money, power, control, right? It's not hard to connect the dots there. So you have this corporation that's basically just taken over production of the food we eat. They manipulate the farmers, make life hard for them, harder to keep profitable, and then they're introducing these chemicals that they're just like encouraging to be sprayed onto the food that we eat. And that's modern day genetic engineering. I think it's dangerous. I think it really is. I think it's irresponsible. Because God, he's given us what we need through creation to eat and live with our needs met. We do not need to be doing this, right? He's called us to care for creation. We are the caretakers of God's creation, and he's called us to be good stewards of it, not to exploit it for greed and selfishness. And I think that's what's going on. I mean, you know that saying, there's more than enough for everyone's need, but not enough for everyone's greed. I mean, that's what's happening here, right? We have more than enough food, more than enough resources for everyone's need, but we do not have enough for everyone's greed. And the problem, especially in America, is we want things bigger, we want things faster, and we've turned our farms into factories where we can produce things faster and bigger because, frankly, we're Americans and we're fat and we want to go to McDonald's and we want to get a Big Mac right now and we don't want to wait and we want more and we want more and we want it faster and faster. And we've created this demand that is impossible to keep up with unless you start changing how animals are kept and how the food is built from the seed level. I mean, unless you make these changes, you can't keep up. And we've created that demand, and we're basically exploiting the earth. And we're doing it because we can do it, right? Because we have the technology, and we've discovered these things in science and advancement. But, you know, Ian Malcolm said in the original Jurassic Park, what you call discovery, I call the rape of the natural world. And I think that's what's happening here. There are consequences to this. Just like in Jurassic World, our creations will come back to bite us. They will. Our pesticides that we're ingesting will come back to bite us. And this, there's actually in the news, a Monsanto lobbyist claimed publicly for a crowd that you can drink Roundup. Roundup is their famous weed killer that is used popularly in suburban, you know, homes to get rid of weeds and stuff. He says, oh, it's perfectly safe for you. You can drink a whole glass of it if you wanted to. Well, some clever dude in the crowd actually produced a glass of Roundup, and of course, the lobbyist freaked out and refused to drink it. I think Monsanto knows what it's doing, and we have to be careful here, okay? Because when you spray Roundup on your plants to basically, frankly, to not have to do as much work of weed pulling and everything, it's a convenience. But when you do that, what's happening to our dogs that are like rolling around in that stuff, right? What about our kids that are outside and in the backyard and they're eating the grass that we've put Roundup on? I mean, people matter and animals matter, and they matter more than not having to pull weeds. And we need to think about that. We need to think about what our obligation is to creation. And I don't think corporations like Monsanto care about that. I don't. I think the evidence is in what they're doing and how they're doing it and the way they're frankly acting like bullies in their methods. So that's GMOs and kind of genetic engineering. And then there's even another theme in Jurassic World that was good. It was this whole theme of like taking care of animals. Claire is kind of this callous person. She doesn't care about the animals that she has. They're kind of just like props and puppets for her to make money off of. Claire and Owen come across this dying dinosaur that got hurt by Indominus Rex. And she looks at this dinosaur as it's dying in the eyes and tears up, right? Because like for the first time, she sees that this is a real living thing. And she feels empathy. And it reminded me of this movie, this documentary I saw a few months ago called Blackfish, which, oh my gosh, if you have not seen this movie, go see this movie. This is an important film. Everybody needs to see Blackfish. When I saw it on Netflix. It might still be on there. I'm not 100% sure, but you could rent it online for a couple bucks. Totally worth watching. On the surface, it's just about the SeaWorld and the attacks on the trainers and stuff that have happened over the years, but it gets a lot deeper than that. And by the end of the movie, you realize some things about these orcas at SeaWorld. You realize that these orcas are not designed to live in small tanks for our pleasure. That is not the primary or responsible place to have an orca, right? And the reason why they're churning on us and killing us is probably because we've confined them and messed with their brains and their bodies, and they're frustrated, right? These are fish that in the wild swim over 100 miles a day, 100 miles a day. And we've got them locked up in little tanks to do tricks for us all day at SeaWorld. And SeaWorld takes babies away from the mother and ships them all over to other parks to make money. And in the movie, you see in this real footage of this mother, like Mother Orca, crying and weeping for her babies. And it's crazy because they say that the orca's brains have more emotional capacity than a human brain. It's crazy. And we're just treating them like our little playthings, like they're made for us and for our amusement. And it's kind of the same thing that Claire felt about her dinosaurs in Jurassic World. And I think it's wrong. And my eyes were really open when I saw Blackfish. And then I started thinking even past the orcas. I started thinking about zoos, right? Like lions in cages. Should the lions just be in this cage for us to take our kids to and take pictures with our phones? I mean, like, shouldn't a lion be in the habitat that God created for it? Like out running in the wild in the savannah? No, they're in these cages in like Wisconsin in the Midwest. And we're just, I don't know. And, you know, it's something we all have to wrestle with. It's not something overnight. We're just like, never going to a zoo again. I'm never going to an aquarium again. And I think it does depend on the animals, you know. I don't think there's as much of a problem with, like, you know, little fish or something that don't actually have that same sort of brain capacity, like an orca or a lion, that understanding of kind of where they are and that consequence of agitation when they're not in their natural habitat and things that can go wrong there. So if we continue to mistreat these animals and exploit them, I don't think we can be too surprised when they turn on us. And in Jurassic World, Claire and that owner guy, they bioengineered a monster. And Claire didn't, Chris Pratt was scolding her because she raised the dinosaur by itself, didn't have any social interaction, and the first chance it got, it busted out of there and started killing everything in sight. And the same sort of things are going on today at places like SeaWorld. And these, when we mistreat our animals, there are consequences. So this is a serious responsibility. And we need to be responsible caretakers of creation. God's given us that command. And, you know, before we know it, there might not be anything left to take care of. So that is something we need to take seriously. Well, there you go. So that is my rant on Jurassic World. Again, I'm sorry if this was too negative for you. As I said, this is a franchise that means a lot to me. It meant a lot to me as a kid. It still means a lot to me. And I'll admit, it's very possible I have really unfair expectations. I get that. And look, at the end of the day, hey, the film managed to touch on some important themes, right? We can hold on to that. And the truth is, good art is really hard to create. It is. And I don't want to ever be callous and act, you know, like I said before, like Colin Trevorrow is just this inept filmmaker who doesn't have any idea what he's doing. I bet he does. And I'm rooting for him. I hope that he goes out there someday and really nails it and makes a better film than this. This is a real human being, and he went out there to make a good movie. And there's no director who sets on a set to make a bad movie. They want to make a good movie every time they're out there. And he fell short. And you know what? Good movies are hard to make. And at least he's out there making movies. And I hope in the future he gets it right. I really do. I hope he does. And I also hope that Star Wars is the good movie we think it will be. So that at least one movie franchise from my childhood can rise up and not be another modern day debacle. All right. As always, keep the faith, my friends, and I will see you next time.